Okay, we are on the record, so we'll call this meeting to order. This is the Civil Service Commission of Bainbridge Island, a special meeting that's been set for today. And present, we have all five commissioners. We have Will Patton, city attorney. We have Kate Brown, our secretary. We have Sue Schultz, our acting chief, and
Commander.
Commander, excuse me. And we have another guest again, Larry Dickerson, who is here as a director of public safety. Okay. Thank you much, and I would ask everybody, we also have one guest as a public member, and that's Robert Dashiel. Thank you. Welcome for coming, Bob. Anybody who speaks up, of course, please project your voice to that odd-looking device in the middle, because we are making a audio recording, and there are people who listen to it, and we want to make sure that we're heard. So, we'll call to order, and we'll start number two on our agenda, which is the commissioners each in turn talk about whether there's any conflicts of interest to be disclosed or any relevant communication since our last meeting that might be interesting to our business here. William, start with you.
I have no conflicts of interest to disclose. I have none. But I did participate in two meetings with one. It was just with Bruce, and we were going over at his office. We were going over rules and discussing some revisions, and some of that we'll get to later in the agenda. And then there was a second meeting. Bruce and I, Kate and Will Patton, and I participated in that meeting. And that's it.
Okay, I have nothing to disclose.
Dave?
I have nothing.
Rob Killian, no conflicts of interest, no communications. Okay, and again, this is Bruce Wildman. I've got no conflicts. As William said, one of the items on our agenda today is to discuss proposed amendments to the civil service rules. And we had a subcommittee which was composed of those four individuals, and we'll get to that as number nine on our agenda. In terms of communications, a couple of interesting things. One, there was an email from Debbie Van, to the council, wondering why we were having Steve DiGiulio come and consult with us. One of the items on our agenda is to discuss whether we want to have Steve DiGiulio phone in to our meeting maybe next month so that we can ask further questions, a follow-up on the seminar that Kate went to. And when Debbie Van saw that on the agenda, she had some questions about hiring DiGiulio, under what circumstances and how much money, and I emailed to her and explained to her the scope of this thing. It was really probably a 45-minute conversation, and she was appreciative of that, sent me back an email saying thank you for explaining. So, again, we need to respond, I think, promptly to people who have questions. Second, Kim Hendrickson, as you all know, has been working on a group that I think she calls Collaborative Policing, Community Policing, I can't remember the exact name. They had put together some draft principles from their group. She sent me a copy, wanted to get my opinion. I told her that I could not and would not give my opinion as a commissioner, because that's not my role. But she and I discussed my personal opinions about some of their policies. So, again, I'm taking the attitude that even though we're commissioners with fairly specific duties, we're open to have any conversations. And, in fact, it's good for us to have conversations with the community and broaden the sense of participation and know what's going on out there that'll help inform what we do. So, okay, let's move on. Approval of minutes. Kate, you have the minutes?
Yes, I emailed these. I didn't bring copies, but the July 13th minutes. I will just let you know that Bruce had one change that's recommended. The item about reviewing and approving the eligible registers, and I specifically called out that the motion included for entry levels to forward all four names to the chief, since normally we only do the top three. So I called that out, that there were four candidates and all four went to the chief. And then for the laterals, Bruce suggested that I, again, use that same language and say forward only name to the chief, just to clarify that there was only one and that went. So I made that small change.
And that reflects what we in fact did. And obviously, I think hopefully you all remember we sent four names because two of them had the same score. We are permitted to do that under the rules. Does anybody have any comments, questions about the minutes, or a motion for approval?
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, minutes are approved.
Who was the second?
I'll second.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, we now always leave a time for public comment for items that are not on the agenda, because we're interested in the public's thoughts. Robert, I don't know if you're here for any particular comments, or you just want to listen, which is fine too, or participate.
But I'm here because I'm interested in this budget. Yes. If I'm any budget for the next 2 years.
Okay.
And second of all, I already planned to listen to findings that public comment on items not on the agenda. In other words, we can't provide except what we're here to talk about.
Well, the reason it says that is because we want to invite comments on literally everything.
Yeah.
As we get to items on the agenda,
yeah.
I...
And most committees don't work that way.
Well, that's the way we work. We invite comment throughout the entire meeting, and that's the best way, in my mind, to build credibility with the public.
I understand.
So,
very much.
Good. Thanks for coming. We appreciate it. Item number 5, report by the Chief of Police.
Well, I'll reiterate, you know, a little bit about who I am and where I'm from.
Please.
First time I've been to the House Church, it's nice to be here. Plus, I also serve as a commissioner for the Thurston County Sheriff's Office. You know that, but I spent 35 years with the Lacey Police Department, retired as the chief in 2005, and since then I've been working for Prothman and Waldron over at Bellevue as firms that bring in interim police chiefs and other interim positions, and I've served at a number of agencies, Molly Terrace, Beauty Gap, Wasilla, Alaska, Battleground, you know, different cities around the state. Glad to be here. I've been here for probably about a month and a half, and we have identified some of the issues. I did my homework before I got here and identified some issues. I think, and I have talked with Kim Hendricks and her group 3 times since I've been here, and I am aware that court and the police department did do a written response to what they had in the report, and there were a lot of things in there. Were good ideas, you know, there were positive things, but and there were other things, you know, that we probably, you know, would want to read more about, but basically what I'm doing is working with the officers right now. I'm reviewing the policies and procedures of the department, looking at the evaluation process, looking at community outreach programs so that we get out in community. We've currently set up 2 town hall meetings, one starting on the 20th of September and another on the 4th of December. One in September is going to be at City Hall here at probably around 6 o'clock, and for folks to come in and to voice their concerns and to hear maybe what some of the issues are. And the other would be, like I say, the 4th of December, same, but that's going to be at one of the fire halls, I believe. We've probably identified 75 goals so far, the things that we're working on.
75 goals?
75 different projects that we're looking at working on.
Get it done by the end of the year.
Huh? We're working on it. But we're also doing community surveys. We started that, too. Basically, the way our survey process works is we randomly look at complaints that police respond to, they handle, citations you issue, accidents you investigate, and we send out this form with a letter from the chief or from the commander asking them to evaluate the services that we performed. And it's amazing. Sometimes you get a, you know, 1 month you might get a lot back, 1 month you may not get a lot, but my experience has been that they usually have been pretty positive towards the departments that I've worked at. We've gotten some back so far, I believe. But, you know, it's early in the game right now. You know, there's a lot of things going on. You know, we have set up meetings. I meet monthly now with the lieutenants. We have weekly briefings twice a week with the duty supervisor, detectives, to talk about what's going on in police. We also are working on our budget. You know, I think we're about halfway there, but we're working on that too, and all kinds of different things. And you're welcome to come by the police department anytime, see me. I can kind of give you probably a better idea of doing. And, you know, we understand probably one of the big things is we need to toot our horn a bit because, you know, I haven't been here that long, but this department actually, has a lot of, gets a lot of pretty nice comments from the community. Plus, I personally and Commander have actually gone downtown and probably talked to most of the business people down, on Main Street going through town. And the comments have been pretty positive, but one of the things that they would like to see is they'd like to see the officer arguing, walking down, which that's a good thing. So, you know, and then have a meeting next week, superintendent of the schools, here to talk to them a little bit about other things, some things proactively doing there. So I'll let Commander, I'll let Sue go ahead and say a few things too.
Well, to get you up to the, I guess, where we're at department-wide, currently we're just about over the vacation season. We're still finding ourselves basically four officers short, and that's because we have the officers that are currently in FTO program for over at the academy, and then we have the one opening we're working on filling. The lateral recruit from Colorado, Officer Rick Flair, is doing an outstanding job right now. I'm hearing good things about her work product. I'm seeing her written product as being extremely excellent product coming from a newer officer. So I'm very pleased with her position here at the department. The other two officers, they are both still over at CJTC. They have approximately 5 weeks left at the academy. The graduation is set for, I believe, October 17th. And you're all invited to attend that. We will make a big announcement so folks can be aware of that event. Currently, one of our entry-level officers is actually number two as far as academically in his class. He is also the class president, so we're very pleased with him. And the other officers doing quite well, too. And other than that, our folks are still on 5/8. We haven't been able to get back to our 4/10 position, which is a desire that the officers have. But at this time, staffing levels have forced us to remain at a 5/8. Other than that, we're moving ahead and forward.
Okay. Thank you both. Questions?
Just a couple follow-ups. You mentioned the grand list of 75 goals. Any of them that might apply to civil service actions, recruiting, or any efforts that we might have specifically?
Probably job descriptions. I'd have to, actually I'll supply you with a list of those to look at. You have them online, so let you look at.
So yeah, anything we can do to help in those efforts or add them to our forward-looking plans that would be useful to think about?
One point before you leave that one. I don't know if you had a chance yet to meet with Kate at all. I know you've got a million things you're doing, but she's in the process of working on our reclassification or redescription of the civil service job, so hopefully, Kate, you guys are coordinating on that.
We are. Mm-hmm.
You're going to give us an update on that later on in the meeting. Yeah.
Go ahead. Any kind of status that you can provide on filling the one opening as far as how background investigations are getting along or filling that?
We're moving forward with the lateral applicant's background, so we're moving forward with that.
Okay, any other questions?
Yeah, Larry, how much of a commute do you have?
Well, I brought my RV up. It's parked out at Cedar Glen RV Park.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's not awesome.
I live in Olympia, so it's not enough.
Comments, questions? Well, on behalf of the commission, I want to thank you for not only coming today, but coming to this community. Mm-hmm. I believe we have a lot of strengths in our community and our police department. We just seem to have some miscues in communication, and I think sometimes you need an outside hand to sort of guide people back to the table. So more power to you is my personal comment. So thank you. Okay, let's proceed ahead. Kate, you have a report on several items.
I have two things to share. The police officer job analysis process. I gave in that memo, you may recall that the deadline that we asked for those to be back was August 8th, and I've only received three, so I have sent a reminder to the lieutenants, and then I also copied Chief Dickerson and Commander Schultz so that they would be aware. And you know, I realize that everyone's very busy and probably people are on vacation, but hoping to get those back.
Okay, good.
So I'll keep you posted on that.
All right.
And then we discussed the idea of submitting some follow-up questions to Steve DiGiulio following that training seminar that I attended. And I came up with four general questions. Some of them are questions and some of them are sort of just general, you know, looking for more information on a topic. So I don't know how you would like to proceed, if you want me to just share those with you now. I know you had a couple.
Why don't we start with just the fact of the event and the format a little bit first.
Mm-hmm.
Just a background, if you all remember, DiGiulio and I guess probably his firm, Foster Pepper, right?
Yeah.
They hosted a seminar that Kate went to. And she came back with a long memo of interesting items. Plus, he answered some questions that I had posed as a commissioner. And it was a lot of information, but there were some follow-up questions that I felt we should come to, and Kate also felt, and I think some of us expressed that. So the concept was to, presumably we have to hire him. He's not going to do it for nothing. But we're talking 30 minutes, 45 minutes, whatever it takes, probably through a conference call, putting him on the speakerphone, because I don't think we want to pay the extra hour and a half it takes for him to come here and be here in person, and just set one of the meetings going forward to have that question and answer session. I suspect that it might attract some members of the public who would want to ask other questions as well, and I think we should welcome that. But I also don't want to jump ahead. I want to make sure you guys are all comfortable. I think this is a worthwhile thing to do with our time, and it's the right format, and any other comments or questions you have about that proposal.
What would be the focus of, I mean, where are most of the questions coming from, directed at
him? Well, I can give you my four real quick, if that helps.
Sure, if you want, we can move to that subject.
And that will give you more context.
I had two.
Yeah. One question I had is, you know, he mentioned a couple times, and I've read it, I believe, in the statute that civil service applies to all full-paid members of the department, and I just wondered how we deal with part-time employees, if they're still covered. I want to know more about the differences between provisional and temporary appointments. I think that that's a little bit vague, and it's possible that in the past those were used at, you know, maybe the wrong time, you know. Mm-hmm.
And you'll see that when we get to discussing the rules, because we all, four of us, struggled with how to deal with kind of overlapping use of those terms.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I wanted to know more about his suggestion to not have preset scoring standards in the rules. I thought that was interesting, because I'm pretty sure I read those in the model rules, but I could be wrong. So I wanted him to sort of just elaborate on that. And then he also mentioned that oral interview questions can be discussed in executive session, and I wanted to confirm what category that you know in terms of the reason for going into executive session. If it's evaluate qualifications of an applicant, I don't know. So I just thought that would be useful information that would allow more freer discussion for the commission when you're talking about the questions.
Yeah.
That was it. I have yours here. Do you want to?
Yeah, I'll just say.
Okay.
I actually had a third one that it just occurred to me after reading Kate's memo. He had said, I slipped my mind. What was that other point? All right, welcome back to that. The other two, the two that I wanted to ask was, one, he had said specifically, I guess, Kate, according to your notes, he had said that it's totally appropriate, in fact, even recommended, to have a city employee serve as secretary because of all the advantages in terms of knowledge and plugged into the system. But he said, so long as the commission has discretion as to the choice of the person. So my follow-up question to him would be, in our current city code requirement, the manager, city manager, gets to name a person, and our discretion is really to say yay or nay. And I just wanted to hear from him whether he felt that was legally supported, not because I'm interested in challenging the city's code, but I think we ought to know whether there's a problem there. Second thing, what relates to, you know, if you remember, I asked several questions that tried to get at the notion of the discretion of the appointing authority with regard to making choices between eligible candidates. And Steve Giulio's response to that was basically, as long as you're not acting in a discriminatory fashion, which implicates civil rights, the appointing authority can decide to pick or not hire, hire or not hire from the eligible list in their total discretion. And I'm personally totally comfortable with that, but I wanted to hear him reconcile that with the case, Supreme Court case of Reynolds versus Kirkland, which seems to me to put heavy emphasis on purely meritorious-based hiring and promotion decisions. And again, I'm not challenging his opinion, I'm just asking him to give us a little background as to how, what legal authority he has for his role, as opposed to the one Supreme Court case that's cited in his annotations seems to emphasize merit as the one and only basis for those decisions. And again, remember, we, in addition to our role as filling the eligibles list, we're supposed to keep our eyes open for things that violate the civil service rules. And I have no desire to be activists or get in anybody's face, but that's part of our duty, so we need to understand the parameters. I had a third one. It was just based on what you mentioned, and I'll think of it.
Okay.
So those are the only ones those are the questions that we immediately had before us. If you guys like, you commissioners like this idea, just to broaden our understanding of our role and our responsibilities, I would urge you all to reread Kate's memo about the seminar. Possibly when we do our rules review, other questions will come to us, and maybe we take the next, you know, two to four weeks to come up with, everyone can submit questions. We give them to him in advance, and those form the basis for him giving us a 45-minute tutorial over the phone.
Well, I would want to run it by Will to see if these are areas and questions that you would be comfortable addressing to us, because you've helped us with so much already. I know we're not going to an outside authority.
Oh, this doesn't offend me, Dad. Mm-hmm. And I think Steve is, in many places, recognizes the state authority, go-to person on civil service issues. He conducts this annual civil service conference. So it's a logical choice to ask him his opinion of those questions. And I think particularly with Bruce's question about the code and the city manager's selection, nice if you get that opinion from someone.
Okay.
I just got an email recently. This is William Foster. I just got an email recently from the CLE. This conference is coming up again. And
right. I brought the flyer.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So
it may be helpful for one of the commissioners to go this time. Kate went last year.
To the spring one, or was it?
Yeah.
Kate
went last year, but this one is in September in Wenatchee. Once a year.
Yeah,
this is a two-day.
This is a bigger
commitment. What Kate went was an afternoon basis.
Well, she also went to the seminar.
Oh, you went to the other last year.
Yes, I did last year.
So, Bruce, my thinking is I think it's a significant step, and I'm not sure where the funding goes in this issue, hiring for an hour or 45 minutes outside counsel to give us legal advice, and to that kind of formal actual process of hiring an outside law firm for that little amount of time.
It can be done less formally than usual.
Okay, there's that. And I also think, and maybe this is what you're thinking, maybe not, that we were able to put questions to Mr. DiGiulio and get answers from him without kind of hiring him right before. There's a whole memo.
One clarifying that.
Yeah.
The context was that Kate went to his seminar, and that was $140.
Yeah.
So she was there as a registered app member, and she was invited to submit our questions. And so this would be the only reason why sort of going with him is again, not a slight to Will, but simply because it was sort of a follow-up. Kate and I viewed it as sort of a follow-up on the seminar.
Right. This is just a follow-up on the follow-up seminar.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can ask Mr. Giulio whether he would answer these questions as a follow-up rather than as a formal hiring. We don't need to pay him and go through that.
I'd love it if he'd be willing to do it for nothing.
Well, he did it last time for basically nothing. And I don't know, Will's suggesting that maybe one of us commissioners would enjoy going to Wenatchee for 2 days and attending the CLE or whatever it is. I'm not volunteering.
Wonderful.
And then we'd have another.
On that basis. Subject, I think that would be great if one of us could go, at least one of us, because it'll really inform our knowledge base. I can't, personal business reasons, I just can't exit myself for two days and something like that. But if anybody feels they can, you know, that's wonderful.
And the dates?
The 18th and 19th September. So really, I mean, it starts at 1:30 in the afternoon on Tuesday. They do a 3-hour basic training to new commissioners and staff. And then Wednesday, 8 to 4:30 is the presentation.
So you could, so as a commissioner, you could do it as a one day back and forth?
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. Just skip the first part.
You can also just go to the 3 hours. I mean, that's a long way to go for 3 hours. But it's only $75 if you just want that 3-hour basic training.
Well, I suppose what I'm hearing from Will is one thing, and that is we could ask Steve DeGiulio whether he's willing to do as a follow-up to the seminar, get on the phone with us for a half hour rather than formally hiring for that. And, you know, that's reasonable. I do that with clients all the time. But we can ask that question. That's one. Two, if we do have somebody going to the September seminar, I guess one question is, how does that mesh with our little personal question and answer session? Or do we wait until after that? Because maybe that person will come back with additional insights. Somehow those interact. Thoughts? Comments?
If one of us are able to attend this, I think we can take those questions just like Kate did to her conference. Take these series of questions with us to this conference, see if he can answer them ahead of time in writing, and then present them as part of his presentation. And then we can bring that information back with us. And then if there is more and more follow-up after that, or public wishes to engage in it, set it up for later.
That's another approach as well. I like that. Any comments?
The only other idea you'd made mention of, if we do have a phone conference with him at one of our meetings, I'm just wondering about maximizing his time in addition to our questions. Not that I want to in any way limit the public with being able to answer any questions, but literally there could be a laundry list of people stacked up waiting to ask questions, and suddenly the 3-hour-long phone conference with him. So I'm wondering if we could somehow collect those public comment or public inquiry questions here first, and then could have him, instead of answering cold call questions, have a prepared list of questions that we'd like him to address, and there may be matching questions.
Yeah, and I think that's a good idea, and my offhanded comment was not to suggest that I support the notion of just nailing him down for 3 hours of public interrogation, because I would put a cap on it of 45 minutes or whatever it is. But I like the idea of pre-processing it so we have an idea of what's involved. All right, well, let me offer what seems to be possible consensus, and that is I'm hearing that people are okay with doing this, or even in favor of doing this, though there is this question of whether of the cost of doing it, and we'd like to not spend the city's money if we don't have to. Why don't we all think about whether one of us, if any of us, is interested in going to even one day of this seminar, Wenatchee, and then we'll come back to this topic of having DeGiulio present to us if and when we think it's necessary, following up on someone possibly attending that seminar. So I guess the homework is think about whether you can afford a day, even one day or a day and a half to attend that. William and I have already said we can't fit into our schedule, but I don't know what about the other three of you. You don't have to declare your major right now if you don't want to.
But time is short because it's coming up in a couple weeks.
The FRSVP by September 11th, and our next CSE meeting is the 14th. So technically we need to somehow get information back to Kate if one of us are able to do it before our next public meeting.
Okay, so if you think you're going to do it, then you need to coordinate with Kate to sign up before our next meeting. Therefore, at our next meeting, we'll be able to know what we can do further on this topic, so we'll know whether anybody's going. Okay?
So
Steve called me on a totally different subject, and I didn't know he was calling me this afternoon, so I asked if he was available for a phone conference on your next meeting at 4 o'clock, 14th, and he penciled it in. So I will tell him to pencil it out.
Yeah, tell him that we're probably going to kick it at least two to four weeks after that. We appreciate his being available, but we got to figure out how it fits. Okay, thank you. Okay?
That's really all I have, except I will just follow up on a conversation we had at the last meeting about whether lateral applicants should take a written test, or, you know, discussing that requirement. I sent an email out to the listserv, and I received 16 responses, and only one agency requires the written. And then I forwarded that email from public safety testing to let you know what the test covers. It does cover state laws. But then I wrote back to him after that and said, I just want to confirm that laterals take the exact same written test as the entries. And he said, yes, that's correct. He said, it's surprising, actually, the number of laterals that fail the written test. And they found that in some other areas, they don't ever have to take a written test. So I wanted to mention that because my statement last time, I think, was something along the lines of, if these people are already police officers, they must have already taken this test at some point, and that might not be true. So, but then we just have to decide what the importance is of a written test.
So it seems to me that leads us to two key questions. One is, as you just said, is it important that laterals take the written test and the corollary, or do we believe that actual experience is a sufficient indicator of the same quality that a test might show that we don't need a test? And maybe most importantly, do we think that we're deterring candidates or losing opportunities with candidates because we require the test?
Most of the other agencies that responded said they all have separate processes that they've set up, so we don't know. We want to think about an alternate set of criteria or whatever to evaluate those people. I'm just mentioning that now. We can come back to that another day, but I just wanted to share that.
I think we should put that on the agenda for later conversation. I don't know if Mr. Dickerson or the commander has any comments about this or in terms of your experience in other jurisdictions.
Some of the agencies have phone testing on their laterals, but most of the agencies that I've worked at have their own testing processes for laterals. They still do the same backgrounds, they do the polygraphs, they do the psychoeducations and all that kind of stuff, but they'll have maybe an interview process with the scoring process, and it's a constant advertising process so you keep the list up. I think probably public safety also requires the PT test, all the stuff. They should be able to pass the test if they want the test on. I'd have a problem with that.
We are committed to the notion of oral questions, oral boards, and we were just questioning whether having the written test on top of that is something that is found by lateral candidates to be unusual, and therefore they cross it off their list because they just don't want to bother with it. I don't know. Or it puts us at a disadvantage because it builds in an extra time frame. And while the good candidates are being snapped up, we're waiting for test results. So
lateral results are, question. Your entry levels are probably going to be your best candidates, but most a portion of your laterals can't pass the psychological polygraph, and some of them are just gypsy cops that travel from one agency to the other, or an agency wants to do it. I mean, from my experience, a lot of agencies have been burned by that. I understand the time period, and I understand, FTO program and how long it takes to get an officer. But, if you want one on the road, you want a good one. And, my own personal opinion, and that's not the opinion of probably every agency, but I think you need the best quality candidates from that field.
Okay. Is everyone amenable to us having a fuller discussion of this at a later meeting?
Yeah.
So I think it's an important issue.
Okay, I'll put it on the calendar. Maybe not next time, but the next one after that.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I have for that item.
The only thing that may move that up is if whatever we decide on the laterals would affect the next round of interviews that we get to here in a second about November, if we need to change a job posting or the process that we need.
Right.
So.
Because also we would need to have some applicants to interview. And right now we don't have any lateral applicants. So.
Oh. All right. We'll get to that in a minute. Let's do the next item on our agenda is a discussion about the budget. And Robert, I know that you're here to hear that specifically. I don't know if we're actually going to be talking numbers. We're going to really be talking more about process and what's coming. But, you know, you're welcome to come back when we get more details. But, Kate, why don't you give us a little rundown as to what to expect, what's going on, and what's our possible involvement, if any.
Right. Okay. So we had talked about this topic months ago, and we had this penciled on the calendar for, I think it was even in July. So I put it on August since that was our next meeting, and then I realized after I published the agenda that really that timing is not right because the city council will receive the city manager's proposed budget on September 26th. So there's really nothing to provide to the commission or anyone else until that time comes. So it's sort of out of sequence there. So I apologize, that's my fault. But what I would anticipate is after that meeting, after the council meeting on September 26th, then Chief Commander will come back the meeting in October, maybe go into detail about certain aspects of their budget proposal, like you said, if there's anything in there for recruitment or anything that would be of particular interest to the commission, then and we could have a further discussion at that time. We could also talk about if the commission is interested in different ways of supporting the department in that request, whether it's, you know, writing a letter, attending a council meeting, calling a council member, etc. There are different options for conveying support to the department. That's it, I think.
Mm-hmm. And so we're hoping Mr. Dixon to come back and present the budget to us. I assume that will be your responsibility, and you know, our comments, our prior conversation has been, you know, is there a role for us? And our interest, obviously, is promoting the values of the Civil Service Board and making sure that there's the financial support to make that happen. And I don't think we have any sort of political agenda beyond that. But we wanted to know if there was a way that we could participate, if you wanted us to participate, if it was advisable to help support those goals, if we can figure out, if we can define them appropriately. So it's an open-ended discussion we'd like to have. That would, I guess, would be in the October meeting. Comments or questions?
I'm trying to think in terms of the process, how this plays out, and I imagine the city manager probably, there's last year's budget for the year before that, and then there's a discussion between the city manager and the department. Probably the department says this is how we'd like to shift things around, this is what we would request. And then the city manager takes that and looks at other demands, looks at a pot of money and how it's grown or shrunk, and works with the department on fine-tuning that. Is that I can't imagine it's correct, but is that close to what happens?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you're in the process maybe now of working through a budget with the city manager.
Correct.
Yeah. So there may be small points of disagreement perhaps on, and then the question is, do we, you know, get recruited into that effort or not? But we'll see how that goes.
I hear the caution in your voice, and I share it, in that we don't particularly want to become part of a political process. On the other hand, two things that immediately come to mind. If we think that the integrity of what we're trying to do can be improved by, one, more budget allocation to recruitment so that we have a higher quality of applicants, or two, more budget allocation to, say, temporary officers so that the department has better flexibility to deal with vacancies while we're struggling to find the applicants, those are two examples that immediately come to my mind. Oh. And to the extent that our weighing in for something like that would help the city council see the wisdom of it, maybe it is a role for us. But that's for us.
And we're all entitled to our opinion on
of course,
any budget.
Right.
So we can.
But we can decide to get involved, even if we're not invited, I suppose we can decide to get involved, or we can decide to defer and just be quiet. That's the discussion to have.
But I think the idea is to be informed.
Yes.
Right? And so,
good. Okay.
Connor. My only other question I might have is before that new budget is set, does the Civil Service Commission, separate from what the police department budget may be, have discretion from the city to post additional ads to try to get more lateral applicants as an example? Where in our budgetary authority, and that's kind of gets back to what Linda had been talking about, is if in the short period of time to be able to find more lateral applicants, do we need to take more newspaper ads out of the Seattle or the Intelligencer or all over the state or the country, either online or in written forms, and is that out of our budget or the city's or police departments, and where that might fall is my question, but what we might need to do in the near term before the budget might be set.
Well, and I think it's a great question, and I think the concept of, quote, our budget needs more conversation, because,
right.
Kate, as I understand it, there's a $6,000 line item that's under our commission's name, but the origin of that line item was the amount of money that used to be paid to the prior secretary was an outside employee, and that burden has basically been swallowed by the HR department for us. So the question becomes, what's the nature of that money that's left there? Is that our budget to use for other things or not? And do we get that every year? And how do we, Kate, tell us how that issue gets addressed in this timeline.
Let me insert a comment.
Please do.
Because I think that at your next meeting, if we can arrange either Ellen or Morgan to come talk about that, because mm-hmm. you're sticking Kate in as if it's...
Okay. Yeah, if there's no protocol that she can report to us on, then maybe we need management to advise us.
Yeah, I think that statement would come best from that.
That's fine.
But I can answer the part about the advertising. That does not come out of that line item. So that would come out of the HR budget. So, for example, you just mentioned, you know, we should be advertising, and I agree with that. So I don't know if I need the permission to actually instruct me to mm-hmm. place those ads, or as HR, if I just say, we really should be doing more advertising to get more laterals, and then I just do it. I don't know. Do you have an answer to that? Because I would
like to.
No,
my understanding is, but Morgan or Ellen will have to state this, is that their belief is that all of this is the city's budget.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the budget authority lies. And they're you urge them to make some expenditures that may not extend the budget.
Right.
So, for example, if you wanted, after your discussion, if somebody goes to this conference, the city would pay for it. It probably won't come out of that $6,000. It'll come out of some other budget. And if you decide later to hire Steve DiGiulio to be on the phone for 45 minutes to an hour, and he wants to get paid for it, recognizing that if you send him questions in advance, he'll spend time thinking about that and build for that as well. But that'll be paid out for good services budget, not out of your budget.
So maybe this needs Morgan to answer, but do you know what the status of this $6,000 line item will be in the next year's budget?
Probably won't be there.
Probably just get disappeared.
Yeah.
Unless we find a need for it.
Well, but what I'm hearing from Will is that if we can show a need, it doesn't matter whether we have a line item or not.
Yes.
We just have to show the city that we need a certain extra X dollars for support for our mission. And
again, like a true lawyer, I'm going to equivocate and say that view needs to be expressed by, with some firmness by either Morgan or
Right. I mean, they control the checkbook, and if we disagree with them, then I suppose we can get nasty, but nobody wants to do that. We're all here to discuss.
Or have a debate with the council.
Right.
And, it all depends, because, of course, the budget is being presented on September 26th. I don't know if they will be able to come to the September meeting, but I would think it's definitely October at the latest. So I will mention that and get back to you.
Okay. So we've touched on both parts of the budget conversation. Both of them, I guess, are going to be deferred we have Morgan or Ellen. Ellen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Ellen is the finance director.
All right, we're moving ahead. Police officer hiring process, the upcoming oral report.
Right. Okay, I have...
Remind us of the schedule, if you would.
Right.
It's been a while since we last met.
Rob, you might have to back me up on this. I believe I thought November 13th.
I think November was the next reason for one that we felt.
Or maybe it was the 6th, because that is the week of the regular meeting. So I think if we say November 6th and then we meet on the 9th, I can have the results to you for your approval. So November 6th. Right now we have about 92, I believe, entry-level applicants. And like I said, no laterals at this time, but I can certainly do some advertising to see if we can do anything about that. You know, it'll be interesting to see if that makes a difference with the testing requirement, because there are only certain days that these tests can be taken, and sometimes they get full, so I don't know what that impact that will do.
I suppose we could... pilot program, we could just simply decide as of right now, we're, at least for a test period, we're not going to require written exams for laterals. She could incorporate that in her advertising and see whether that, it's hardly a scientific test, but we could see whether that produces any candidates in the short period of time between now and November. But I don't know what you have in mind.
I'd be okay with this question.
Would we want to do something in addition to the oral board and the application form? Would there be other requirements? I know some departments, I think they have to do, you know, write a report, whatever you call it, on a computer. So similar to the writing exercise, but they actually can type it out. There are probably a number of options we could consider to add on to that if you wanted to. Or you could just do the application and the interview, which I think is what we used to do up in 2007 or 2008.
Oh, really? The historical practice was not to have PSAT tests.
Right. I don't know if that was always, but recently it was.
I'm a little uncomfortable on removing the written test, mainly because it's the only portion that is actually a tested, validated process. It's a national test that has been tested in the courtroom and by experts. To develop that test bank, and it seems to me the only boilerplate that's defensible across the nation that is taken by every officer, entry or otherwise. And I think it also gives us a good comparison, even though we don't equate entry with laterals, we can at least see the performance, and as the director had said, is that you may well get those better applicants out of the entry level pool as compared to the laterals. Well, those test scores, at least one point on the curve, plays that out as well. And I don't necessarily know if it is a detractor to lateral officers, and if it is, maybe it's a detractor to the lateral officers that we don't necessarily want if they're afraid to take.
I want to second Rob's comments. I'm unconvinced. I don't feel like it's that the requiring the written test is what is keeping our lateral applicant numbers so low. So I don't think kind of removing the test will then we'll see any big response in terms of the number of the laterals applying. And I also think it is a good, you know, if we did have several laterals taking tests, we have another measure to compare them, and a more objective measure than perhaps the orals are. So I don't think we need to take that step of removing the written test component. I'd like, before we were to do something like that, I'd like to be assured that it isn't a requirement of our rules, so somehow it's in our code that both, that the laterals get both pieces of testing. I know that we could then change that, but right. that would be
right.
Something that I'd want to, a hoop that I'd want to jump through before doing so. But generally, I'm kind of against the idea.
Let me offer one, what I think is a clarifying comment. I'm kind of on the fence on this subject, but I don't think, if someone is literally deterred from applying because they don't want to take a test or they're afraid to take the test, I totally agree with that that's not a person we want. I'm suggesting that, a little different from what Mr. Dickerson said, what we heard from Chief Feldman was that laterals are actually in demand because the department saves a significant amount of time and money when they bring them in. And therefore, if there's 10 departments looking for laterals and 9 of them are just running through candidates quickly, and they see Bainbridge Island, which has a 6-week processing time because there's a test involved, it's not a matter they're afraid of the test, it's simply a matter of we're not going to get them to come to our door because they're going to be gobbled up by the other people who don't require a test. So it's a timing issue more than a character issue. Doesn't necessarily mean we should still do it, but that's the perspective of it.
Yeah, I recall that perspective. I mean, I remember hearing that same thing. I think you've heard something a little different about the nature of laterals at this.
Well, Kate reported that only one of the surveyed agencies fired.
I'm right. sure there are more out there, but they didn't respond to my email, so.
Well, since we have at least mixed opinions now, I guess that the proposal is that we continue to do exactly what we're doing now. We want to talk more about this lateral testing question. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like the need for more data,
Yeah.
You know, because I think we're a little bit in the vacuum here.
Right.
Why don't we not change anything, Steve? I appreciate what you supported that concept, but why don't we not change it for this time? We'll talk about it down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just keep going forward in November with our previous procedure.
Yeah.
Pretty okay with that?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, so citizen panelists, are we going to run an ad again, or would you like to go back to the bank of applicants from the last time?
I think for one, I'd like to continue to at least announce it, and if there is additional new interests, then we take that into consideration.
Okay.
Just make the announcement on the website, newspapers.
Okay.
I agree. I think that's good public relations for us, if nothing else.
And are you okay with, so I'll contact all the previous applicants and let them know that we're doing it again, and if they're still interested, to let me know, just what I did last time. Right. I'll probably run the ad just one time, if that's okay with you, just as a cost base. I'll probably do it sort of mid-September. And then do you want to identify now who's going to decide who those people are? We have plenty of time, but.
Who is going to be the subcommittee of,
yeah.
Of our group? That works. That's worked so well twice at this time. Well, I haven't done it yet, so I suppose I should volunteer, though I'm not anxious to.
It's fun. It's interesting to look closely at some of the members of our community that have an interest.
Anybody want to do it with me?
I can do it with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Rob and I will do it then.
Great. Okay.
That actually remembered in my adult brain what my other DiGiulio question was. He says, and it's relevant here, he says in his list of stuff that he recommends against having police officers sit on the panel.
Mm-hmm.
We've had good experience with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's his thought about that, and what's our thought process on that?
We could definitely ask him to elaborate on that. The only thing I remember him saying is that there's a potential bias if the person, I don't know if there's some issue with, you know, that person thinking, oh, I have to work with this person. And I was like asked, I can't remember the details, but that was really what it was. It was either after the person gets hired if there's some issue, or during the process if they're going to use their influence, I guess, with the other panelists, which I have not seen happen, but we can ask them to elaborate on that.
Okay. Is everybody comfortable with us continuing to use officers?
Yep. Yeah,
absolutely.
I think it makes a lot of sense.
Critical.
Yeah. Until we get a lot more better argument for that.
Right, right, yeah.
Yeah, let's stick with that. Okay, thank you.
Okay, and then the process revision. Steve and Linda, I don't know if you were going to have any, do you have any? Is there a need for you to provide me with any sort of written feedback from the last process? Or, you know, Steve made a good presentation in the last meeting about his impressions, but sort of anything else that we need to do to revise. I have some notes that I've kept.
Yeah, I can't remember any recommendations I would have to
okay.
To protect your time, I mean, you know, one of the thoughts that we had was to have people be available and then just kind of run them through.
Yeah.
So that you wouldn't have gaps to fill.
We talked about that. We're going to shorten the...
And for the police officers, too, I felt really badly that they had allocated that much time and had to twiddle their thumbs waiting yeah. for appointment times.
I thought we agreed next week.
Right.
Yeah. And we're also going to do the night before calls.
Right.
That really ratchet stuff down to put the pressure on.
Yeah. And I wrote down something else here, too. Sending out the key traits and characteristics ahead of time with the application. So, anyway, I will summarize all those thoughts into one sort of area for you guys for just plenty of time. I keep saying that, but...
Currently satisfied with the latest iteration of the questions? I think they've gotten better every time, and we really don't want it to be an ever-changing landscape. Rob, you were sort of our guru on the questions. Are you happy with
that? I was comfortable with that. The only additions or changes I may have would be based on the job analysis output.
Right,
so
yeah.
So how the job analysis description comes out, if that needs to feed or change some of the questions based on that outcome.
Right.
Well, that's obviously... couple of months down the road. So
yeah. that likely may not be able to make the November inputs, but whenever that's completed, we can sit down and look at those outcomes that change and then develop those new characteristics.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, one of the things that I thought was really interesting at the process, one of the panelists had been a principal at a junior high, and one of the questions that he asked was, who was your favorite childhood cartoon character? And I was just charmed by that, because it seems like a lot of these questions are able to be anticipated, and a question like that, would you just get a different sense. And so this certainly isn't my area, but I thought I would put that on record as an interesting thing to do that I had never thought.
We'll keep that under consideration. All right, so Kate, do we have a clear plan here in terms of dates and sequences?
Yeah.
And you will obviously come back to us. Let's see, will we have the citizens, the list of interested citizens at our next meeting?
No.
Okay.
We've got two meetings before us to interview.
Great, so we'll put that in process.
Yep.
Okay, that takes care of items 8.
Yep.
Okay, we're now coming to the discussion of proposed amendments to the rules, and I want to acknowledge we've got two new members of the public who just joined us, Bill Knobloch and Debbie Vann. I want to welcome you both here.
We are.
Oh, that's okay. If there was something you were particularly interested in, we could talk about it later. But again, we always welcome people come. We love participants, and we try to keep it informal. And if you have questions in the middle of something, we try to give the commissioners a chance to say their piece, but if you have a question, please raise your hand and we'll try to fit you in. Don't do this real form. Okay, next item, last item on our agenda, I guess, is the proposed amendments.
Yep.
Kate, and you've got copies of that?
Yes, I do. I think there are enough, and I can make some more if you need any more.
It looks like we're good.
Yeah, we've got one. And if you've got any extras for the folks?
I do on the copier, so I can run and get. They're already copied.
Do you guys want to see this?
You sure?
This is not going to be finally approved today. It's a discussion.
They're all printed. I can go get them.
Okay. Just a background here, just to recap for the record how we got to this point. These are the civil service rules, which are passed by us, the Civil Service Commission, with our discretion to change them in accordance subject to applicable law. These rules were revised prior to a series of changes that were done by City Council last year, and it became obvious right off the bat that there were inconsistencies between the city ordinances and these rules, so that immediately got us wanting to amend these. as we started going through them, let's say it this way, I agreed, volunteered to take a first crack at doing amendments. As I started going through amending to meet the city codes, I frankly saw a lot of other things that I thought we could improve on, and so I just produced a red line draft just as a mere discussion piece. With the commissioner's approval, we then appointed a little subcommittee that was made up of Kate, Will, me, and William, who looked at my first draft, and particularly with legal advice coming from Will and some practical questions coming from Kate, the four of us reworked that draft, and that became the red line version that was passed out to the commissioner. Our proposal today is to literally go through, given that the four of us have already seen it, it's really a matter of Linda, Steve, and Rob having a chance to comment on things that they think are wrong or missing. Depending on how fast this happens, if we get to a consensus here, I would like to propose that we do some kind of informal public announcement to allow for a public comment process, not in any kind of statutory formal way, but just simply to give the public a chance to see what we're doing. Because the amendments that at least our subcommittee is proposing address several different issues. Some of them were contentious issues last year, and we think we've at least mitigated some of the concerns in the rules revision. So we want the public to have a chance to see it. And then, subject to public comment and integrating those comments, we might approve it in a secondary meeting. So there's just a bit of history plus a bit of proposal about going forward. At this point, I'll just throw it open to the commissioners, who can either comment on either process, or we can just get right down and start going down in sequential order, sections 1, 2, 3, 4, et cetera.
Yeah. I was just make a general comment on the work of the subcommittee. I reviewed the rules, and I think the changes were made by the subcommittee are excellent. We put everything in place. And anyway, after reading, I was very comfortable with both changes. I have a couple comments.
Great. Thank you.
And I agree with that. I read through them, and it looked like he tidied things up and did some formatting things, and just we have a better product now. And so I'm comfortable with that, unless there are some specifics, but it looks like you did a great job.
Okay, and like I said, I did the first draft, but it was a collaborative effort among the four of us going forward. So thank you all. Appreciate that. Rob? Comments, questions? You can get into details if you want.
No, absolutely a great job. I had a few individual ones, and we can get to that as we go through.
Okay. Well, why don't we just jump right in? Why don't you go first?
Overall, just kind of through the whole thing, one of the terms that is mentioned quite often throughout the whole draft is chief of police. I'm just wondering if we need to also add public safety director or their designee or something like that when we give certain authority or recognize certain authorities to be given, do we need to just add on those few other words and or their designee for the situations that we've had in the past or during the situation where we may hold certain things to only the chief of police?
Good point.
Yeah.
Subtle one.
And I think we could maybe add, we'll chime in if you think there's a legal problem here, but I think we could add a definition for chief of police that includes or designated temporary person in that role.
I think that's probably the best way to handle that.
Okay, we will work up some language on that. I think it's a good idea.
As we also discussed the last time, I think we were talking about these rules or one of the issues of whether or not hire a lab candidate, that the Bainbridge Island Code provides that the chief of police has the authority to hire with the consent of the city manager. Not entirely the police chief that has the authority.
Mm-hmm. So maybe the definition includes some kind of reference to as appropriately authorized under, you know, city code.
Yeah,
this sounds like one that you should craft.
I shall do that.
Okay.
Are we good through two then? One comment, section 3.3.10, in regard to maintaining and preserving the security of the commission's records. You let's see, and keep all such records under secure lock and key. Might like just a few extra words about or appropriate information technology security measures, just so it's not a really physical cabinet, but it's also maintaining that the city's share drives that Kate may place things on are properly secured or not available to anybody to just click on a shared directory and see an applicant's information or something, just so that it's limited to just
creating. Yeah, that's a good point.
So I, just so it covers all of those backups of IT share situations, so or appropriate information technology security measures, access restricted to the commission of its members and the secretary.
Yeah, I was thinking we could do all of yours.
I didn't know if we wanted to go through the whole chapter.
I mean, if someone has something that's directly on what you're saying, but we'll just want it.
Section 6.3 under classification of positions. I know it's mentioned briefly before in the introduction. Do we need to make any with regard to Rule 1.4 regarding collective bargaining agreements? Are there any situations where a CBA may affect the administration of classification process? If CBA says sergeant or lieutenant must have X number of years of service or these requirements, that this may contravene. I just want to make sure we're not stepping on any CBA toes by those allocation of the positions and how we deem those classifications. Maybe just an intro that with respect to Rule 1.4 regarding collective bargaining agreements, then we preface the preface statement to the rest of the classification process.
Well, if you look at section 1.4, it talks about this potential conflict and says that in any conflict, the collective bargaining agreement fails.
So this covers everything, whole thing. So it's already covered. Okay.
Yeah, I think I agree with that point. Okay. And it's true as a matter of law anyway, so we couldn't trump it no matter what we said.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure we... then I'm up to 7.5 in regard to rejection of an applicant or eligible. Specifically, 7.5.2 is physically or mentally unfit to perform duties of the position assigned. My feeling on that is the commission are not medical authorities, and we wouldn't be one to determine physical or mental fitness. I'm just wondering if we need to change the language to something that's performance on standardized physical fitness or specialized skill exam are below established standards, or evidence presented by medical or mental health authorities to the commission, or evidence presented to the commission by the background test. It's not the commission that's going to determine that those mental capacities or physical fitness levels. It'll be the evidence that's provided by the authorities that we consider.
I don't have a problem with that. I mean, we could say something like, just add as demonstrated by, credible evidence or something like that.
I just want to be the, because it says if it determined by the commission that the applicant.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we're not determining that.
All right. We'll come up with some, why don't we let this, our committee come up with some wording.
And just... for clarity's sake, I think we removed all those other sections of felonies and misdemeanors. We're going to move that all to the cover application job description, right? Other requirements.
We had this long list of disqualifiers, which was no longer consistent with the disqualifiers that we had reworked. So rather than, and those things change over time, tattoos, et cetera. So rather than having those embedded here, we're just recommending
that
they be pushed out.
Disqualifier list that cover of the job description.
Yeah.
Okay.
One sidewalk on the disqualifier, I don't know if this is the right time to say it, but at some future point, you all got an email which was an informational memo from the MRSC, which talked about categories of military discharge. I don't know if you all saw that in your email. And I think our wording in our final disqualifying list where we addressed military discharge was a little bit different from what MRSC was recommending. I think we had the right categories, we just used slightly different wording. I'm going to ask Kate to propose a modification to the new list so that we can be consistent with the legal advice that RSC, if everyone's okay with that.
Okay, I'm up to section 7.7, notice of non-acceptance. The only thing I would add there is in that last sentence, just giving the Secretary Chief Examiner an electronic method to make those notifications. So either oral notice at the time of the filing of the application and or electronic or written notice mailed to the applicant, just so it gives her the opportunity to make that electronic notification instead of being tied to only the same.
Okay, I think we put in, go to 2.12 because we did address this. I think in a comprehensive thing that covers everything. Maybe I
sent by first class U.S. mail or email at the discretion of the law. So any notices.
Yeah, so this
all
is
notices
connected with all notices by the Secretary. So
okay.
We might want to take out the reference to in 7.7.
Mm-hmm. Take out the word mail,
yeah.
Written notice.
Either oral or written notice. And then just leave it to the general rule to talk about whether it's electronic or mail. So take up the mail.
What do you agree?
Yep.
That?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Rule 8, section 8.7, parts and weights. And then you struck the very last sentence. Applicants will be informing the application materials of the relative weight. Curious what the idea of striking that last sentence, that seems like something you'd want to notify everybody.
Well, when I read that, it occurred to me that we were relying on PSD to do that every time. And I hope they do, but rather than putting it in our rules and setting ourselves up for an objection by a candidate that he didn't get told that, I think our consensus was just to leave it out and make it part of our practice as much as possible, but not commit to it in our rules. That's the political judgment. Is that what our concept was?
I think so.
I mean, our understanding is that they do talk about that every time when they offer the test.
Oh, yeah, they do, yeah. I mean, they know that they have to get 70%.
And is that uniform for all jurisdictions?
Right. Mm-hmm. That's PST's passing score. So
well, that's PST's.
I don't know, maybe somebody out there has 75 or 80, but I doubt that.
But I think this statement is also relative to our weighting. The written exam or the oral exam
right.
is 60% and the written exam is 40%. So this is the candidate realizing that whatever he or she tested at PST is only worth 40, but I have a 60%.
But my point is, I think what we found it on is the practicalities. The 100 candidates go in there and said 25 of them check Bainbridge Island. How are we going to get to them, the 40 60?
I think it's on their website. I think it's in our agency information, I think it says.
So that's the constructive knowledge mm-hmm. that you're talking about, essentially?
Yeah, either on the job announcement or either through PST or on our own website, we describe the job and the requirements to do it. That just seems like a transparent thing that we'd want to advertise, mm-hmm. that we're weighting oral communication skills above the written word in that case, that standardized test, and then our oral report as well. So it's more for the public and for the candidate.
Not unreasonable.
And it's not, it's a great thing to do, and it's something that we intend to do. This makes it mandatory that we do it, and if we fail to do it, we're liable to, you know, someone can come back at us and say, you forgot to do this. So taking this out is not intended to remove our intention to provide this information. You know what I mean?
It just removes it as an appeal.
Yeah, as a basis for appeal. So, but I don't feel strongly if you feel like that's an important thing for us to commit to.
I think so long as we can maintain it as a practice of something we regularly do. Mm-hmm.
It's currently on our webpage at PSD, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's be sure.
Yeah. No, I mean, I tell them anyway. I tell them when they are confirmed for the oral.
Okay.
So, but I mean, so I have no problem leaving it in.
All right. Well, it sounds like you're okay and the consensus is that we can take it out. But what you're hearing, Kate, is a strong desire to make sure it is on the website
yeah.
so that people, when they take the PSD test, they know what the weighting has been going into it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
And then the last point was 10.3.5 regarding prior service and the field temporary vacancies. I read that, and I think it's going to get into our broader discussion later and later months of the use of temporary and provisional positions to fill. But I read this, and when filling the temporary vacancies, it almost feels like, it reads to me as if they even score lower than new candidates, we're going to put them at the top. Because that if they were on a promotion, an entry or promotional register, those eligible with 3 months of service who have shown on a register to have been laid off in the past 12 months shall be placed in a grade order at the head of the list of eligible for certification according to these rules. So even if we have a batch of new candidates that outscore these individuals, we're still going to put these folks on the head of the list just by virtue of them being laid off.
That's what it says.
You know, this is probably a good
opportunity.
We didn't write this. This is a good opportunity to highlight the limits of what we've done.
Yeah, yeah.
Because as we got past Rule 4, 5, and 6, we got more and more a number of technicalities that at least I and William didn't have experience with. This would fall in that category.
Absolutely.
So this is we attempted to be comprehensive, but it is not definitive. And therefore, we're definitely going to find things that we want to tweak over time. This is one of those things that I guess I'd have to kick to Will and Kate is to tell me what it means and what it should be.
It would also be interesting to see how that overlaps with the collective bargaining agreement with recall rights.
Yeah, that occurred to me as well. That seems like a heavily bargained issue. I can't believe it can stand alone. So maybe we can research that. We can let the experts research that some more and they can come back with some suggested language. But as I said, as you get farther into the last five or six articles, there's going to be a lot of technicality, particularly on the whole issue of hearings, where we didn't spend a whole lot of time on because it's not something that comes to us very often. Yeah. We don't have the expertise.
And the original charge was simply to make the changes necessary to reconcile the rules with the new ordinance. And then we went a little further to address some of the concerns about conflicts of interest and putting something in place to protect that and some of the other things. But, you know, Bruce got going.
Don't ever start me.
So that's it. That's the end
okay.
of
Rob, appreciate your comments. We'll revise those items. Let's move on. Steve, do you have any additions?
I have one. Rule 2. 2.2. Where we put the new language or lesser terms as a commission-based side. My comment is I'm not sure that's needed. Right now it's 1 year. I think when you took office, she said, well, make it shorter than that. It seemed to me if we wanted to make it shorter than that, if you did, just resign. Mm-hmm. And then the commission would then appoint a new chair. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I also think you probably need a good 4 years chairman to be a good chair.
I'm open to it either way.
Yeah, but I just think it's redundant.
I think I read that though that the person is resigning from the commission.
No, I think you could resign as chairman.
Okay, but it sounds like they're saying that upon appointment of a new member, so it might need some clarification there.
Chair would you resign?
I don't.
Term, commission appoint a new member. That means new member to the office of president, chair.
I don't know, because then it says shall proceed to elect a new chair. Anyway.
Yeah, you're right. It's a little ambiguous. And I suppose the question is whether the commission wants to, even if the candidate wants to be a year-long president, maybe the commission says, no, we want to switch in 6 months. So, you know, it's a small point. I only put it in because I know we've had that conversation when we started 8 months ago. So,
the change in the ordinance doesn't reflect this.
No, this is totally internal. I'm okay to take it out. Any opinions on that or objections?
I can take it out.
Okay, let's take it out.
I have no further comments, except at what point And two, they do it, and they give notice to the field.
Let's finish the comments, and then, we'll talk about the outreach part of this, because that's the next step after the thing we have to present. Linda, any specific?
No, I we've just been meeting for 8 months, and for this quality of work and nuance to go through and to harmonize and to clean up, I think it's really pretty extraordinary. I think that as we continue to meet and have different experiences come up, then we'll go back to these and see if they reflect what our needs are. But I think that this is getting us legal, it's cleaning it up, and I think it's just a wonderful, wonderful job, a lot of work. Thank you.
Okay, good. I think you're right that a year from now we may have a list of things that we need to tweak, because we learn as we go here, that's for sure. All right, so we're at a point where I think we have, at least in principle, a consensus on all the changes, though there's three or four of them that we need to reword, and Will, there's a couple that need your input, so we can turn this thing around to do further revisions for the next meeting. Now, let's talk about, assuming we then have a draft that's ready to go, let's talk about outreach both to the public, to the guild. What do people feel about the timing of that and the process that that should take? And I don't know whether Will and Kate have any suggestions on that.
My thought is that the guild ought to probably be the first to be notified, because there are a couple of things in there that are negotiable, and if you go to negotiation, you might make some changes. And after it's been reviewed by the guild, changing it, then you get the problem.
So do the guild as a part of our process before we go out to the broader public comment. And obviously anybody, this is all public information.
Yeah.
Anybody can comment anytime they want, but in terms of before a formal request for comment. So I think that's wise. Any other thoughts about that?
I think this, we could call this initial draft, and it could go, if it's publicly available, but we can make a point of sending it today, tomorrow, to the guild, maybe with an explanation that you're going to seek further public comment period. I think that's where we're going next, which is, okay, we'll make these final few little tweaks that we talked about today. Will we wait and come and then hear back from the guild also at our next meeting?
Let me suggest this. Why don't you give our little four-person subcommittee until next week to make these small changes. They're not that big. We will then send it out to all the other commissioners, and at the same time, we'll have Kate share it with the guild, let them know that this is a proposed draft that's very close to being a final draft. At next meeting, we hopefully get guild comments, incorporate them, and then we have something that's ready for a public presentation draft.
To receive public comment on it.
Right, and then we post it in some public way. We give 30 days for the public to comment and come either talk to us via email or come to meetings, and then the meeting after that, we hopefully have something that we can approve.
I might just add one other set of eyes on it. At the same time we give it to the guild, I feel we can share it with Larry and Sue and receive their input in parallel at the same time to see if they have any comments or input as well.
I was kind of assuming that, almost as they're sort of ex officio members of this group. So,
And I think it's really important that we state that our intent is to harmonize with existing law and to clear up any ambiguities that could cause problems. And to make, what you always, unless you're into mischief, what you always want to do with rules is to make them understandable for everybody, so that they can't be used against anybody unfairly. And I think that it's really important for that to be presented as we hand these out, that we want, if anything is unclear, we want help with that, and because we want these to be workable.
Okay, well, why don't we work up a cover letter,
mm-hmm.
a cover letter that kind of states the goals.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great idea. It's actually several purposes, and it ought to be explicit, I think. That's right.
I don't want to promise too much about making all of this 100% understandable.
No, that's way, we're way far away from that.
Reasonably.
An attempt to enhance the transparency. How's that?
Yep.
So we won't promise too much.
Well, and I really like the idea of making sure that we incorporate into this the best available technology. Because I think one of the points that Rob had is that this continues to evolve, and we don't want to be locked back into procedures and things that will keep us from moving forward.
Okay.
Bruce, in the format, do you want the changes from the original so that you won't see the changes from today?
You know what,
today's draft?
You know what I was thinking is we've only identified probably 6 clauses. Let's continue to keep it as a comprehensive red line and just simply make a little cover note that says changes are on sections 2, 3, 6, 12. Because I don't want to get confused with drafts going in different directions, and we want to have one comprehensive red line.
Right. So, I just had a few typo things. Just prove I read.
Okay. Good. I always find a typo. That's my motto.
I had one other just discussion point, section 10.7, and just kind of trying to get clarity over the difference between temporary or a provisional appointment, and whether or not we need to have that discussion in a short period of time to discuss those usage before we go forward with a finalized rules amendment, or we think about that and change it next time.
Well, and what you saw on here is we felt that the rules themselves were ambiguous as to between those two terms. We couldn't find any different definition between the two. Will didn't have any enlightenment on that. We were going to ask Julio about that question, but now we pushed that off. So what we did in this draft was simply to sort of make the terms synonymous, basically. Why don't we just keep going forward on the schedule, and if it turns out that we need to change it again next, after the first year or something, we always can. I sort of hate to hold up on that one issue if we're not going to hear from Julio very quickly, or not necessarily even, maybe we don't send somebody to the seminar, so we don't have that information. And I'm questioning whether there really is an answer out there.
Yeah, Rob, the relationship between 10.7, 4.4.2, I couldn't make sense out of it either.
It was very ambiguous, and Will pointed that out, and we just kind of then sort of blended them together to answer the issue. So,
do you recall, or Commander, just circumstances when we designated, when the Commission and historically designated one as a temporary usage versus a provisional usage historically?
No, and when I went back, I saw that even in like the same document, it would be referred to as a temporary in one section, and then later on the same person referred to as provisional. So
they're interchangeable in use.
I feel like they have been, and that's why I had that on my list. I want more understanding of those terms.
I don't think we need a motion at this point since we're just approaching consensus, and I think we've got that. I think we've got a process going forward. Any questions or comments? I know you guys don't have the document in front of you, but if you have any comments about the process from public members, we're open to hear those as well. Down the road, we're going to actually be handing it out to you in a formal way. Bill, you had?
I'm speaking on history, and I have several questions, and it's just whether or not you address some of the problems that we've had in the past. The scores were held by the chief examiner, and the chief examiner would have the top 3 as eligible for a replacement or a new hire. And I was wondering whether or not that is still in force, whether you made those changes. And also, in regards to the provisional officer, there was certain complications because if the provisional officer was not in the top 3, what was the basis for that provisional officer being designated a provisional officer, even though he didn't score in the upper crust, so to speak, in terms of hiring, and whether or not you made any changes on that. And then finally, one of the sore points for the city has been extending the provisional officer beyond what the rules say and how long a provisional officer may in any annual or 12-month period be on duty. And if there's an exception to that, what criteria, if any, has this commission established for the chief of police who makes that request, or the commander, what criteria have you established in order to allow that extension? These are questions. I don't know whether or not you've addressed them yet, but I have several files that are quite extensive that illustrate the problems we've had in the past, but I must comment the dynamic here at this commission meeting is significant in the fact that you're showing that the city can make a change and adjust to changing times. We're 20 years old, and previous commission was in force for quite a long time with the same old rules. You've come along here, and it's obvious to me you make the changes, and that's a positive. But back to my questions. I raised them. If you haven't addressed them yet, I'll be waiting.
Let me just respond on, and it's a work in progress, so let's take it under advisement. But I think the key rule that might answer your second two questions, which is qualifications for appointment of temporary folks and determination of length of appointment, is in 10.7. And we, the way we've opted it, at least provisionally, or possibly provisionally,
temporarily.
The way we've got it here is it leaves it kind of open. It doesn't try to lay out specific criteria, because I'm not quite sure how we would do that. I mean, I look to Will, maybe he's got some experience in this, but what it currently says is that when there's no suitable eligible person on the eligible registry, then you can appoint a temporary, or, and we added broader discretion to say, or when the commission determines it's otherwise in the best interest of the city, we just simply allow that determination. And I think at least my concept was that it's something that we're going to take seriously. We know that there's been some past history on this, but I'm not sure I could come up, or anyone can come up with a fixed set of criteria that would be embedded in the rule. That may not give a whole lot of comfort, but I'm open to suggestions. Will, do you have a comment on that?
No, I think when we drafted this, we thought about that and decided that the commission, having really an answer to Bill's first question, which was, does the secretary chief examiner have that authority? The answer with this commission is no. That is, it's the commission that makes that determination, not the secretary chief examiner.
Correct.
So when the commission is making that decision, you have more confidence that the agency is, that the five of you, no longer three, but now five, are considering whether it's a good idea or not to hire a temporary person.
And if so,
who is that and for how long?
And I think that's a key point, in that one of the major thrusts throughout this thing was it riddled with too much discretion for the secretary, and Kate was completely supportive of this change. It's really the appointed commissioners who ought to be making these decisions, and we're the ones who are accountable for the results. It's not something that the secretary should have on her plate. And so we clearly have changed that, and so the point is the criteria is something that buck stops here on the criteria, as well as the length and period of time. Bill?
So are you saying that somebody with that list that Kate has, she has a list with all the scores for the candidates, are you saying that a provisional officer can be designated even though he scores in about a third?
First point is that the authority here is only where there is no suitable eligible register from which certification is made. So we've got a register with suitable. That's where the hire is coming from, not through this section.
But what criteria are you using to choose off that list? If somebody is in the bottom third and you go to somebody because he's a favorite son in the community, or that's hypothetical.
Yeah.
Versus going to the top scorers. You always want the best for the community. And that's the point I'm trying to make. What kind of criteria do you need to see?
Well, let me say this. If we had a point where we had nobody who was eligible, let's say that there was nobody who scored 70%, which is our cutoff, but we suddenly had five vacancies in the department, and we were told by the department that we had a public safety issue going on here. We had to get some people visionally in place. I don't think we can say off off the top that we won't reach down into people who are below the 70%. Because we will make a determination as to the emergency of the situation compared to the willingness to compromise the criteria.
But
it's a judgment call that I think we've been appointed to make. I'm sorry.
No,
go ahead.
No. I was rolling my eyes. I think one of my readings of this, and I think Bill's concern, may be that there may be situations, in emergency situations, that we're going to appoint someone into a temporary or a provisional position that isn't even been tested by our organization. That
too may happen.
We're really short on officers, and we need to pull a sergeant from Paulsbow or Suquamish to come over and work for 90 days because we have no list. We have no list even, or we have candidates in the academy, and we need someone to come work for us for 90 days. So where in our rules is the commission somehow approve or vet that candidate that's coming from Paulsbow or Suquamish? Are they going to be the same, evaluated to the exact same standards and have the exact same certification requirements that we would be vetting all of the other candidates that are in our pipeline that are waiting in the academy that we're filling this position as a result of candidates being in the academy for 6 months or whatever?
And I think the point, and I agree with that, and I think the point of this rule, the way it's drafted, is to retain that discretion here. And I think the recognition is that rather than a fixed standard as to who that person will be, this is the tool to use to deal with emergency situations. And we are hoping that we make a good evaluation of how much to relax the standards to the point to deal with the emergency. I mean, you can imagine a natural disaster where we just needed public safety people on the street. And we would reach into a class of people who would never qualify as normal police officers, but balanced against the immediate emergency, it's the right policy decision. So I think that our goal is to have that discretion in here. At least that's the way the draft is currently written.
Well, and I think when you get a copy of the draft, go to 10.7, read what it says, see if maybe there's room to add some criteria. Maybe there isn't, but if you have suggested criteria.
Well, what I'm looking for is a safety valve for the commissioners in the fact that when the chief comes and wants to extend the provisional officer for almost a year, let's say, you're circumventing the process by the fact that you have a provisional officer who doesn't quite make the score that's required for your hiring. What kind of criteria are you going to impose on yourselves or the chief before that request is made?
And I'm not sure I don't know how to quantify that up front. I mean, I think it's going to be I think it's our duty to ask hard questions and to try to.
That's why I'm here today.
Hold the department's feet to the fire, to make them justify that it's necessary, and to give us assurance that this candidate, while not having been vetted in normal circumstances, is going to do the job. And it's a balancing act. I'm not sure there's a way to objectify it more than that.
Well, one way to
suggest it, as William said.
And one way to avoid issues, keep our eligible list full.
Exactly.
Which is what I think all of us see as our primary job, is to get these candidates in, tested, interviewed, you know.
But I can guarantee you that if something serious happens on this island, you know, in the way of natural disaster or man-made disaster, and there's a sudden need for officers and people to keep the public safety, you know, we have to have a mechanism to facilitate that.
I would just add one other thing, that we definitely need that discretion, that flexibility to be able to address those emergency situations. My other thought is ensuring that if we do find a problem of not wanting to extend that provisional officer another 3 months or 6 months, do the rules as we've written it have that escape valve or that approval interruption,
yeah,
that we can say, nope, you got them for 3 months, but you're not getting another 3 months out.
Yeah.
And can we interrupt that hiring process by virtue of our position?
They do.
As it's written.
They do now.
But Bill, one of the issues in terms of this going on now is that in terms of the scores for, there are two different categories of police officers. One is the entry-level police officers, and then there are the laterals. For entry-level police officers, there are two of them now at the police academy, but neither they nor the people who are applicants as entry-level people they cannot serve as police officers until they're certified. So you can't choose, and no matter how high their school, you can't make them police officers yet because they haven't been certified to be academy. It's, so the provisional person has to be somebody who comes from another agency, somebody who is certified but we've decided not to hire before for some reason, or didn't quite make the list for a lateral you want to put in temporarily. So you, in terms of the scores for the new applicants, you can't really use that because they can't become police officers.
Well, I hope we can learn from our past history and mistakes.
I mean, it's really
and
good
the
to
provisional
do that.
Is a backdoor way of getting in into a regular status, temporary, even though it might be limited in time, it still subverts what the original intent of a provisional officer was.
You know, Bill, when I got on this commission, I said to myself, you know, I need to know a little bit about the history, but I sure as hell do not want to adjudicate this.
Right.
But to the extent that it has ever been the past been used as sort of a sub rosa way to get favorite son in the door, that is a direct violation of what we're empowered, we're authorized and charged to police, which
right.
is no favoritism. It's a merit-based system. And so I can guarantee you that, I don't know about old prior commissions, I have no judgment about them. This group is pretty serious about that.
I really appreciate this candid discussion. Thank you.
Yeah, we're happy to have you here. Other comments, questions from anybody? And again, we will be having a more public discussion, more open public conversation. And we truly are open to your suggestions as we go forward.
Can I just a quick question?
Yeah.
Do you run this by Steve Cilio? I wasn't clear what.
No.
Oh, okay.
No,
so
this
he,
is done.
He was on for a different reason altogether.
The only connection we had with Steve, at least in my experience in the last 8 months, was he gave a seminar. I think I read it.
Right, yeah.
Seminar, and then we might do some follow-up questions with him, but we have not hired
him. I didn't
him
know if he was, if you were asking him questions.
He was not. He was not online today.
Okay, that's fine. I just didn't know where. I knew he was going to be talking to us today.
Yeah,
actually, that was not the agenda. Was not to talk to him today, but talk about talking.
Talking about talking to him.
Right. I missed it.
And we agreed to defer talking about talking to him. So you've missed nothing. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have great eyes, so you've got to wave your hand. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to congratulate this committee. This is a big professional time. I wish other committees at the city would consider how this is conducted in the preparation that they did. So, good job.
Thank you.
Second of all, this is so much in the weeds, but I'm going to ask it anyway because there's an issue that I would like to talk about. I would like to see the MRSC comments on military retirement or discharges, just because I raised the issue officially.
Sure. Kate, can you email him that? It was just a public notice.
I'm sure it's
important. Yeah, it's actually really informative.
It was helpful.
Okay, we are at the end of our agenda. Do we have any scheduling issues to talk about, or
do you want to go through this, or should I just email it to everybody? There's really not much.
I mean, I think everybody pretty much knows what we're doing next.
Yeah.
We've got a timeline on the questionnaire job description issue, which is an ongoing effort. We've got
right.
a timeline on the next orals panel.
Right.
We've got a timeline on the amendments.
Mm-hmm.
I think you and I can put together the next agenda based on that with
yeah.
pretty good clarity. And we'll send everybody out a new calendar schedule when we come up with the next agenda. Now, are we now firmly on a monthly meeting?
Yeah.
Yes.
Don't you miss us every 2 weeks?
It's in the rules.
I really do.
Okay. Well, we were doing two meetings a month for as long a time because we felt like we had so much to cover and so much to learn. But we're now trying to ratchet back to monthly, so we'll stay there for a while. Any other comments?
The only thing I may add, I'm not sure where it is on the work list, is if for that September meeting, if we need to look at or approve recruiting or postings electronically or in newspapers in anticipation for those November ones. If you need to get a price list or I'm going to post on these job sites or these newspapers or...
Yeah, I haven't done that in the past. I've just done it and then told you about it afterwards. working with the commander the last time, I know we talked about various websites and specific, you know, agencies to contact for advertising. So if you're happy with me to do that again, we will place an ad in the Bainbridge Review, which is the city's paper of record. So I'll put a newspaper ad probably only there, but then we'll do a lot of electronic advertising. Is everyone okay with that? Or?
To widen our lateral applicant pool, do you want to look at other major newspapers around the state? Or the country, for that matter? I mean, the prices go up and up the more we do. And
right.
Hopefully, search-wise, most folks are going to be doing it online.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about the effect of newspaper advertising. But a lot of laterals look at IACP and the WASPIC, the police chiefs and sheriff's website. So I get a sense that laterals are looking in those particular places, but I'm happy to consider newspapers.
You know, I like the idea of a more aggressive recruitment. My problem is I feel like I'm so much in a vacuum of knowledge because I mean, I know how to find attorneys, but I don't have any idea how police officers communicate to each other in the job. So I don't want us to just sort of randomly lash out on something. We need to have some kind of knowledge base if we're going to expand the recruitment effort.
I could come back to the next meeting with a proposal of locations and costs. I'm happy to do that.
You know, one of the things that businesses do that we might do, too, is if the applicant is asked, how did you hear about it?
Yeah, we have that on our application form.
Yeah.
But the problem with that is that only 5 or 6 people fill out the application because we send it to them before the oral. There's no need to get an application from somebody if we're not going to invite them to an interview. But I can certainly.
Well, here's my feeling. Whether we can gather that knowledge base a little bit more in time for the next orals is one question. But I think we all want to learn more about this.
Right.
Maybe you can do some research and come up with a presentation for the next meeting that just gives an idea of what are the vehicles for communication and recruitment and what works in that industry. I mean, every industry has their own cultural rules. And,
right.
You know, putting it in the New York Times probably is not going to get us anybody, but,
right.
You know, the ways of communicating. So
okay.
Maybe you can educate us that and we can decide whether to go forward.
Yeah, I'm more inclined to more electronic methods, just
right.
More job banks, more job search engines that are law enforcement specific,
yeah.
Or ex-military folks, whatever it might be, that are going to be more inclined to reach out to the local colleges and universities, community college, and the criminal justice programs, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. If you have any, please.
Sure. Yep, I'll pass those on.
Okay.
Okay. We will follow up next week with our final revision of the rules, plus we'll send out, well, I guess we won't send out the agenda next week, but you and I should work on it anyway, just because my memory fades.
Yeah, so. We might send it next week, because the meeting's in 2.5 weeks, so.
Oh,
it's the
14th,
right. So.
That's right, okay, because we're off schedule here.
Yeah.
So we probably will send it next week, just so that everybody's aware.
That should be able to get with you to let you know if I can make this or not.
Okay.
Arrange child care.
All right.
Okay, that's all. If anybody has any further comments, we are adjourned.